All right, shall we? Hi, guys. Good afternoon. This is 10 things you didn't know you could do with Windows Azure. If you want to follow along, this stuff is all up at things.smarks.com. This URL I put up here. There are more than 10 things on the list. We have 25 minutes. I think there are like 30-some things on the list. We're not going to go through all of them. And so the reason I put this URL up here is, well, two reasons. One is after this talk, you can go look at the other ones that we didn't talk about. And the other reason is if there's something on there you want to make sure I talk about, there will be ample times where you can just sort of yell it out and say, go do that one next. So I'm happy to cover sort of anything that's on this list and go through it. I should click on this one first. Did you see this trick that I did here? This is alphabetical, so I called the introduction always start with an introduction. So it started with an A. That's me. Doesn't it look like me? My name is Steve Marks. I am on the web as Smarks in various places. Twitter, I'm Smarks. My blog is at smarks.com. This thing you're looking at is at things.smarks.com. That is my real title. Like, it says that officially in the Microsoft address list. I'm a tactical strategist, which means absolutely nothing. But basically what I do is this sort of thing, and I do a lot of blogging. I'm on the forums, mostly building kind of cool stuff with Windows Azure that I don't think a lot of people know about. And that's really what the point of this talk is. It's going to be a fun talk. It's going to be an interactive talk. We're basically going to geek out looking at some code. Nothing I show you in this entire talk is particularly new in that the features of Windows Azure that make all this stuff work have all been available since at least November of last year, but many of them considerably earlier than that. And but what I spend a lot of my time thinking about is how do we run things in Windows Azure that aren't your typical sort of IIS and ASP.NET application. And so I look at what we have in the platform, apply it to some of these other things, and build cool samples and demos and blog about them. So this is sort of a little mini version of that, which is, you know, we've got a bunch of things in a list here that we can talk about that that show you how to do things with Windows Azure that you may have been able to do for a while, but you didn't actually know that you could. And if we get through more than 10, then hopefully at least 10 of them are things you didn't know. Does anyone already have a favorite one that they want to jump to that they looked at on this list? Go for it. And managing, what was the second one?
The host names.
Oh, the host names. Okay, so running multiple websites in, here it is, multiple websites in the same web role. This one, how many people already knew that you could do this, that you could run different sites in the same web role in Windows Azure? Okay, not a ton of people. How many people have, by the way, deployed something to Windows Azure and actually run something already in there? Okay, because that helps me to calibrate kind of what you guys have seen. This is basically the syntax. This goes in your service definition file. That's right up here. I think you should see the name of this service definition. Well, it clips on both sides here. Let me move this in a little bit. All right, there we go. Servicedefinition.csdef is where all the here are my roles and here are the settings they have, et cetera. One of those sections is this site section, and that's as of the time when Windows Azure moved to full-blown IIS. That's in there. You get to put in here sort of whatever you want. So this actually is an example of, I think, what you're asking about, which is managing the host names and running these sites on different hosts. So if you use settings just like this, then if you point the browser at fabricam.com, assuming that's actually mapped to go here, you will get one app. And if you point it to www.litware.com, you'll get a different app. They're both on the same IP address. This is basically just like spinning up IIS on your server, creating multiple sites, setting the bindings to have different host headers. And so you can do that. So one thing that you don't get is you don't get for free host names. So we will give you some cloudapp.net domain, and then you'll use you'll go buy a domain and map it to this using like a CNAME record. Yeah. Is it possible to change the binding without redeploying? No. At least not using what Windows Azure has built in. Now, you can, through code, change the binding at any time, but that would require you to figure out sort of when you're going to do that and how you're going to do that. If you guys saw the keynote yesterday, Umbraco was on stage, and they were talking about some of their future stuff, but they were also talking about this accelerator that we just released. That does, on the fly, sort of configures new sites and configures new bindings for them. And so that's a place where you might look for code that shows you kind of how to do this. But it's up to you to kind of keep track of those things, make sure all your instances do it, and things like that. This is sort of related to, you guys didn't know there was search until I just did that, but there is. Custom domains, I don't have anything to show here, but I've got a couple blog posts. So if you are on things.smarks.com, you can go and check them out. This comes up if you're doing multiple sites, then you really want to, you need your own domain name. You have to bring it. What does that look like? It looks like a CNAME record, but if you go click on these blog posts, you can see, I think the first one is to my blog, talking about doing this specifically with GoDaddy, and so I've got some screenshots, which I think are now a little out of date, but about using GoDaddy as the way to do that.
Is there no support for A records?
There is no support for A records. The reason there's no support for A records, it's nothing, we don't guarantee that your IP address doesn't change. And so an A record has to point to an actual IP address instead of a named domain. Since we don't guarantee the stability of the virtual IP address, it means you can set up an A record and it'll work fine. It's always possible that we will change the IP address. There are things you can do to limit the likelihood of that, which is keep something deployed in production all the time, and then it would be sort of strange for us to ever change the IP address. We'd have to do something weird. We have no SLA about it, but I've never seen it change if you have something consistently deployed. So you can, what I've seen some people do is set up an A record because you need that at the root domain. So like smarks.com, say I'd have an A record, and maybe all it does is go to something that redirects to www.smarks.com, which is a CNAME record, which will always work even if we change the IP address. And that way you've only broken like the little bit that's just a redirect anyway if that happens. I've also been using GoDaddy, which has their own sort of domain forwarding thing where you can set up a permanent redirect and you put that at the root, and then from then on everything goes with that CNAME record right to Windows Azure. Anything else that, yes? Application pools, yeah. So this was a startup task. I actually recommend that everyone pretty much, everybody run this startup task, because what this startup task does is it disables IIS's timeout on application pools, and so it, it'll keep from, otherwise I think by default every 20 minutes, or maybe it's 30 minutes is the default in IIS. After idle time, no one's hit the website, so not really a big deal for sort of a serious traffic website. But for other things, if no one's hit the website in all that time, IIS just sort of spins down that app pool and waits for the next request to come in and then spins it back up. And that's kind of slow. So that's, if you see a website that if you don't hit it for a while, then the first time you go back to it, it's really slow, but then after that, it's fine. It might be that it's IIS sort of shutting that down. So this is a little batch file that just that you run as an elevated startup task. Just changes the settings here. Now, for other things, if you see some of the text up there is about if you actually need to do something, this is modifying the defaults for application pools. If you actually have multiple websites with different application pools and you only want to change the settings of one of them, the order of things is that not until the time where your role is actually started up do those app pools get created and whatever. So you might need to write this code and put it in like on start in your role if you have to do something that's not just setting defaults. But if you're setting defaults, just doing a startup task. Did you have a... Yeah?
Yeah, like the other, like the health monitoring and things like that, we want to kind of set up how the roles watch the, you know, the worker will watch your application. And is there like a place we can see the other things we can configure there? Like, you know, if it's too much memory or whatever, we've got to restart the role to monitor how we have that.
Okay, so the question was, repeating the question because the recording is going on, I want to make sure all the stuff gets captured. So the question is really, what else can I change there, and is that documented? And because there are a bunch of other settings about monitoring memory consumption and restarting app pools when they seem to have a memory leak and things like that. You can do, it's IIS, so you can do the full range of these things. So if you go look for the documentation on like application pools on process model, there's all those attributes are things that you can change. The only thing that's different here is that you can't really just go into INET Manager and go change the settings with the GUI, because you'd have to log into the box to do that, and then whatever changes you made wouldn't persist anyway. So you have to always script them out. So look for the app command versions of those. But those are actually fairly common that people script these things. So you can usually find And if you can find an app command thing that looks like it does what you want, you should be able to run it as a startup task and it should work fine. So yeah, right there. Yep. Okay, so the question was, is there a way to redirect to like an under construction or down for maintenance sort of thing? You could set something up like that. I mean, what Windows Azure will do is take the traffic in and run your web app, right? If your actual Windows Azure application is offline, then there's nothing listening there. You could do it at sort of the DNS level or something, but there's nothing that Windows Azure provides that really does that. Okay, so back to here, yeah. Okay, so continuous integration, so you want to set up continuous integration where you're, say, sending some new bits up for whatever, and you want to do the build and put the things live and that sort of thing. You can build that sort of thing. I guess here's a meta point that sort of that is maybe good to just kind of state about everything I'm showing here, which is that if it runs on Windows, then it should run on Windows Azure. And that means if you know how to set that up and get and do your build and publish it to a local IS box, a local IS server, you could also do that in Windows Azure, but it would be work that you'd have to do. I've actually done this. I have some code, not code I can really show you for a variety of reasons, but I have some code that just takes new bits, does a build, publishes the build to a Windows Azure drive, and then a bunch of instances take a snapshot of the drive and host it on IS. But nothing built in. All of this is sort of, yeah, you can go build it kind of things. Other stuff people want to talk about, I've got CouchDB running and Cassandra running in the cloud. Any interest in that sort of stuff? And storage, sort of other storagey things? CouchDB. Did someone say MongoDB? Because I don't have a sample for that, but I have seen that run. We have a few customers who are doing that. Here's the CouchDB one. I actually just got this deployed today, so let's see if it's actually working. But this is sort of the proof. That's CouchDB. It's running on two instances with replication set up between them. So if we refresh this page, let's zoom in. So can you guys see this? The process ID there? Yeah, and so as I refresh the page, you see I'm basically flipping back and forth between which instance I'm hitting. So they're both set up to do replication with the other one. So it's basically a pair of servers of CouchDB instances that are doing replication back and forth. And the way that I did it is basically, let's see, where should we start on this one? There's a bunch of code that you can kind of read. But this downloads at runtime in my onStart method, I'm downloading CouchDB. I know it looks like an exe, but there's a zip file in there. So I sort of rename it to zip. I let 7ZA sort of unzip it and set up the ini file to just point, to basically say listen on the right port, and then start the process. So I'm actually starting couchdb.bat. What else? Once it comes up, I have a little bit of code that just creates the database. Technically, I guess you don't need to do this, but I have code here that automatically creates the database, and then in a loop, so in the actual run, in a loop I have something that looks for all the addresses of the other instances in Windows Azure, so we have an API that lets you discover IP addresses of the other instances. It looks for all those, and anytime they change, it tells CouchDB about the new one. It basically turns on replication for the new instance, and that's just, the cool thing about CouchDB is everything's just sort of a REST thing. So I'm just doing an HTTP post that says source and target, and I'm sending that to the replicate API. So you've pretty much seen the whole code for it. I haven't actually published that code yet because I'm still playing around with it. I'm still finding that I have some sort of bug in some of this setup stuff, so it doesn't always, it seems that after a reboot and whatever, there's some conflict on files or something. So I'm still working through it, but I'll get these bits out. I want to make a point about about running other sort of databases or other kinds of storage things on Windows Azure. If you can, use the storage system that we have. And the main reason I say that is it's hard to get replication set up robustly so that you know that you're not going to lose data when things happen, like a rolling update where you're rolling out an OS patch, new Windows bits are coming out. We'll take down sort of like one update domain. That's how it works in Windows Azure. We take down sort of one part of your service at a time, which means some set of VMs, then spin up new ones and keep doing that process. You want to make sure that you've got replication set up such that you're never losing data when that happens, that you don't all the same ones go down at the same time, and they're the only ones that had that data. And that's a little bit tricky and something that requires thought. And so I don't recommend doing this with really sensitive data until you've really done the long scale tests and rebooted instances, gone to the portal, hit the reimage button, and just make sure that all the replication takes care of itself and that things come back up. So it's a little, I do want to give that caveat. You can set a lot of these things up without too much difficulty, but make sure before you put anything sensitive there that you've really thought this through. One thing I've seen people do, particularly the way I've seen people set up MongoDB usually, is that they put one of those, they put the data on a Windows Azure drive, which is the like NTFS volume that's backed by our blob storage. So our blob storage does all the very careful things to make sure we maintain the replicas and don't lose anything. Put MongoDB on top of that, just using that as sort of raw disk, and now MongoDB has all this persistence baked in that no matter what happens to that VM, it's all been saved off to blob storage anyway. So that's one good approach. Over here, I think you had a question. Yeah. Or
where are you writing all that stuff under old?
So I'm unzipping all these things and sort of running this. Where is that data located, and is that durable? It's not durable. It's on the local. Each VM has a direct attached disk that's just inside the VM. There's an API for getting those things. So you declare up front that you want local storage. You do that in your service definition file. And then so then you do something like this. This line right here is asking the runtime, where is that I should go? And what comes back here is a path. In fact, the path is almost always /resources/directory/ some long thing that's like a couple GUIDs together, .couchdb in this case, or whatever you've called it. So if you ever go connect into the box, go to the C drive and go to resources directories. That's where all that stuff is. But might change in the future, so that's why there's an API that gives you the proper path. And that path is guaranteed to have as much space as you ask for. But it's non-persistent, it's just on the VM and there, which is why this runs in my on start. So every time a VM boots up, it's doing this again. It's pulling down the zip file, it's unzipping it, and whatever, which all takes a minute, maybe probably less, to get set up. And so I do that for a lot of the things that I run, things that need to be installed and whatever. I'm just doing that install every time, and it just does it on the local disk. For more serious deployment, what would I use a blobback storage for data, for actual sensitive data that needs to be stored? Because actually, for the CouchDB bits, I would do this. I would just install them on the local machine and just do it again the next time the role starts up. But for the data, if possible, just use our, we have table storage, which is a NoSQL option. We got blob storage. We have SQL Azure if you want a relational database. If possible, use that because those things have SLAs on them and things like that. If not, I think the best option is to use the Windows Azure Drive, so it's actually backed by storage. That's the safest option. I think you're okay if you do something like one of the storage systems that is like rack aware, like Cassandra is actually like this. Cassandra, you could tell it which VMs are on the same rack, and it'll avoid putting replication, on the same rack so that if a whole rack goes down, you don't lose your stuff. And you can use our API to find out what your update domain is or fault domain, which is basically a rack in Windows Azure. And if you tell Cassandra about that, it will separate things. And then you're probably actually okay just using those local disks with proper replication setup. It's like if you're setting up in your data center. I think the thing is that in Windows Azure, we're much more casual about shutting down a machine and then booting it back up than you would be in your data center. And so you just want to test those things out and make sure you got it right. Other things people want to see, one that's really cool that I just want to make sure we we hit, because I think this is an awesome app. By the way, it's known to leak memory like crazy. So now the question is, can you guys get it to hit 100%? So if you go click around on things.smarks.com, each time it's doing that syntax highlighting, like all the prettiness is running some Python code, actually, on the box, and it's somewhat CPU intensive. So if people load a bunch of pages, oh, we're getting there. That's pretty good. All right, now we're talking. So this is actually the live data that's, this is the CPU usage of this app being logged. There, we peaked. We're CPU bound now, people. Site's going to start going slowly, kill all the rest of the demos. Notice that this app is completely unaffected by how busy that CPU is, and that's because this app has actually been hosted in blob storage. So the only server that's getting hit in all this is blob storage. The data is getting pushed to blob storage, and then the page that we're viewing is just sort of polling against storage live. So it's a kind of, it's an interesting hack. It's basically JavaScript querying a public blob container in Windows Azure. Okay, I got to take it off the page now before. Well, for one thing, it leaks memory like crazy, so if I leave it up here long enough, I'll run out. But it's my bad code. This is how it actually works. This is really like the entire code that pushes the data to blob storage. So it's actually pushing it to metadata in a blob. If we go here. This is it. So each role has its own thing, and then it's got CPU utilization. And if we go look at the properties, I'll zoom in a bit, and go to the metadata, 3 means it's at 3% CPU usage at the time I just clicked that thing. And it's getting updated every second. And then the viewer is sort of just reading that metadata back out. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a neat trick. We have 3 minutes left. Who wanted to make sure to talk about one of these things in particular? Combining web and worker roles, sure. So, all right, maybe the code is a little bit lame. I think the meta point here is that this wasn't always the case, and this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of you probably don't know you can do this, but these days, a web role has the same role entry point, the same life cycle. It has this on-start event, on-start method and a run method and an on-stop, which is exactly what a worker role has. And then it also has IIS running pointing at some directory of stuff. But it's got both. And so what I've done here is, this is just a little bit of code. It's code from an app I have called Web Capture, which, let's do something really meta. We'll take a picture of the page that has the stuff we're looking at. But it basically loads a page, takes a snapshot of it, and then gives you back an image. And that is actually, this is a real snippet of code from there, which is you just need to override the run method. And if you go look in Visual Studio, there won't be a run method, because the normal thing to do in a web role is not to actually do stuff there, but to do it in some app hosted by IIS. Just add it. Just type override and hit tab, and you'll sort of find the autocomplete will tell you that there's a run method. If you want to see full code that does that, this blog post is about that app and has the full source code. So I've seen a lot of people doing this for cost-saving reasons, in that they have some asynchronous work driven by a queue that they want to do. Makes sense to kind of put it in a worker role, but maybe it's not a lot of work, and so just combining them into one role is a great way to be able to run less VMs and still get the task accomplished. And holding that thread forever is not a problem. That is correct, because it's actually a separate process. It's really like running one executable while IIS is also running doing something else. And so, so having this thread forever is not a problem. You don't want to enter some tight CPU-intensive loop because you're sharing the same server, but there's nothing, there's no interference. They interfere at the level of they're two separate processes that are competing for disk and for CPU and memory, but otherwise are unrelated. Share folders. Okay. I don't know a lot about this one, to be honest. But there's a blog post that I have a link to here, which has a little bit more detail, but basically goes through the what you need to do. Here's the hard part, I think, which is maybe more visible here. Remember to declare these endpoints. So in Windows Azure, we set up on the VM, we have firewall rules, and we have IP packet filtering, and we have all these things that prevent wrong kind of traffic from moving around through here. So if you want this traffic, so if you want NetBIOS and SMB to work, you need to declare the ports that they use and tell us about them so that we will actually allow that traffic to go back and forth. So I think that's actually the hardest part. There's another little gotcha of sort of making sure the firewall is set correctly. Everything else, this is actually basically just do net share. It's not there's not rocket science here. It's mostly, this is the Windows Azure specific stuff. And with that, we are actually out of time. So I got to stop because in 5 minutes, a whole new talk is starting. But I will hang around, and we can sort of walk out together if you want to ask some questions. Thanks for your time.